sights to show you.
Yeah, this is coming out this week, so we actually might beat your actual podcast debut.
Oh, you will, because that one's coming in like February.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna beat your podcast debut, so
that's so funny.
This is coming out on Friday.
All right.
But I think we're good. You want to go ahead and get started?
Sure.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex, with the, not this week, oh, I'm so used to saying it, the usual segue is with me as always, is Anthony Fuentes, but he's not here with us this week. He, unfortunately, because it's a pandemic, caught COVID. So he is recovering, and we are all wishing him a speedy recovery. But joining me this week in his stead, a very qualified horror aficionado.
Oh, what a compliment.
Carly, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about a very great movie.
Yes. Yeah, this week has just been a clusterfuck, to say the least. So we, sorry this is coming out late, but Anthony had COVID and I had a death in the family, so we, were just like, you know what, we're gonna take it easy this week, so, but I'm very excited, first to have you with us, Carly,
and thank you,
and then, secondly, to be talking about this movie. I'm like almost mad at Anthony for catching COVID because I specifically picked this movie because he hadn't seen it.
Did you make him watch it anyway?
Yes, he watched it anyway.
Good.
So he can at least say that he's seen it, but I don't have his thoughts because I also asked him not to tell me his thoughts. I know. So I will have to get that at a later date. But we are talking about House of a Thousand Corpses from 2003. I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun one, I think.
Yes. Per the usual, I guess, what our guests do always on the podcast is they introduce the episode. So kicking us off with the IMDb synopsis.
All right. Two young couples traveling across the backwoods of Texas searching for an urban legend of murder end up as prisoners of a bizarre and sadistic backwater family of serial killers.
That is such a funny run-on sentence.
It really is. I was, yeah. And what a way to softball the story in, too. Like that.
IMDb is known for their really shitty, like, synopses.
Yeah, that seems very low-key compared to
to what actually happens. It's chaos.
Definitely. And then, sorry, no, should I read the rest of it?
And then from there you can just go and be like, oh, it was directed by Rob Zombie.
Yeah, okay. So House of a Thousand Corpses was directed by Rob Zombie, produced by Andy Gold, and also written by Rob Zombie.
And it shows.
Yes, it is. I think it's like the most Rob Zombie-ish movie out of all of Rob Zombie's movies.
Really? All right. Interesting.
Possibly. It stars the late, great Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding, and I absolutely love him.
Yes.
Bill Moseley as Otis, Sherry Moon Zombie as Baby, Karen Black as Mother Firefly, Chris Hardwick as Jerry Goldsmith, Erin Daniels as Denise Willis, Jennifer Jostin as Mary Knowles, Rainn Wilson as Bill Hudley, and Walton Goggins as Steve Nash?
Steve Nash. What a cast. What a cast.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have Karen Black in here. Like, you have, like, nerd god status Chris Hardwick, like,
right?
You have three other nerd god status Rainn Wilson, like, come on.
Yeah, and they absolutely play nerds in it, which is great. They were nerds cast before their time.
Yeah, they were cast to type for sure.
And so this movie was released on April 11th in 2003. Didn't even realize it was that old. I didn't realize it had been that long. And it had a budget of $7 million, and it made $16.8 million in the box office. Mm. and probably tons of money in merch since then.
Oh, yeah. And then in merchandising and in, like, con appearance money.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, as every time as we cover a new director, let's dive right into it. Yes, we are talking about that Rob Zombie. Robert Bartle Cummings was born on January 12th, 1965, known professionally, as many of you know, as Rob Zombie, and he's an American singer, songwriter, filmmaker, and voice actor.
I don't think I knew he was a voice actor.
I didn't either. I was just like, huh. I don't know if it was just like, oh, we gave him some bit parts because he's Rob Zombie, but who knows. So, growing up, Cummings had a fascination with horror films, and he stated he always wanted to, quote, wanted to be Alice Cooper, Steven Spielberg, Bela Lugosi, and Stan Lee. What a combination. And honestly, he kind of did that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it even is presented in, like, a hero, in, like, a superhero-esque way, in a very...
In its own...
Sadistic and twisted way.
Its own little roundabout way.
So I love that Stan Lee is in there. That seems so random.
Yeah, he's also, like, his parents worked at a carnival. So growing up, that was part of his, like, you know, childhood. They chose to leave after a riot broke out and tents were set on fire. Zombie actually recalled the experience in an interview stating, quote, "Everybody's pulling out guns and you could hear guns going off. I remember this one guy we knew. He was telling us where to go and some guy just ran up to him and hit him in the face with a hammer and just busted his face wide open. My parents packed up real quick and we took off," unquote.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there's a lot... Not even from, like, a trauma perspective, like, holy shit, right?
That explains a lot, I feel like. I
mean, yeah. Well, also just, like, being the child of carnival workers.
Yes. And I absolutely, this is just funny to me because I have such a fascination with, like, carnival circuses, sideshows, and that kind of thing. So to me, it makes sense that I like his movies so much.
See, there we go. So before the success of White Zombie, which we will get into, he was actually, didn't know this, but he was a production assistant for the television series Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I wonder what he looked like when he was doing that.
I mean, I don't know. I really don't. If someone has a photograph, maybe I'll find one later, but, like, did he look like a production assistant, or did he look like Rob Zombie pretending to be a production assistant?
Or did he just look like Rob Zombie and, like, screw it?
Right, but but I feel like the look had to have come after, right? Like, I don't know. I really don't.
I'm so curious. I'm gonna be looking that up later.
Yeah, I mean, I had to find a way to shoehorn that into the episode because I was like, I can't not mention that he worked on Pee-wee's Playhouse. Like, that's too good to me.
So, I can't even picture it.
Yeah. So after that, after his little stint on Pee-wee's Playhouse, he rose to fame with in the band White Zombie before beginning a solo career. Before beginning a solo career in the late 90s. His debut album, Hellbilly Deluxe, 1998, was influenced by classic horror films, as were the music videos for Living Dead Girl and Super Beast. This is the album I grew up with. I listened to so much Rob Zombie when I was a child. It explains a lot.
Fair enough.
But that album was a commercial success, selling over 3 million copies in the United States. And so that's kind of how a lot of us know who Rob Zombie is, not just as a horror director.
Yeah.
But prior to working on House of a Thousand Corpses, Zombie actually worked on animation for Beavis and Butthead Do America.
That seems more in character for him.
That tracks.
Like that one makes more sense than the Pee-wee's Playhouse thing.
Well, he also directed music videos, and he unsuccessfully attempted to write a script for The Crow of Salvation, which also tracks.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
He also did some, like, set design. So in 1999, he designed a haunted maze attraction at Universal Studios. and it was instrumental in reviving Universal's Halloween Horror Nights attraction. There's a really interesting YouTube channel that just goes into like the history of like attractions.
That sounds fascinating. It's actually very cool.
They did a series on the history of Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights, and it was really, really cool, especially like because I love, like, that's one of my favorite things to do every year.
Yeah, I've never been because I think I would actually be too scared. But I would love to watch something about it where I didn't have to actually be there.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a big wimp in any sort of like thing where there are real reality, people.
Right.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I'm able to create some separation. Because House of a Thousand Corpses, or not, wow, okay, yeah, that too. But Universal Studios has, like, it has such a high production value that I'm just like, okay, I know definitely I'm in a maze right now. It's just really well done.
Right, yeah.
Which is nice. If I went to, like, one of, like, the sketchy backwoods ones, I would just be like, oh, I'm gonna die.
Well, you watch too many horror movies to go to something exactly, like that.
Exactly. I've seen Haunt. I've seen the houses on that October bill.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good. I'm so good. I don't need it. I don't want it.
I know. Some of them are wild, though.
Yeah, no. Some of those extreme haunts, like, I say that now, but if you listen to the our houses that October built episode, I specifically talk about, like, I'm like, I consider doing one of the extreme haunts because there's one called Blackout here in LA.
Oh my gosh.
You go through one at a, it's like by yourself. You have to go through alone and it's in total darkness and all you have is like a flashlight and like they can touch you.
And that was my mistake. The only one I've ever done as an adult, I did it at a music festival San Bernardino.
You went to escape.
Yes. Oh, no. They put you in a straitjacket and they put a mask over your face.
You jumped into
and they can hard. Touch you. Yeah, and they can touch you. And that was, I think I could have dealt with the mask and the straitjacket if they couldn't touch me. But that was like, that was too much.
Too far, too fast. You jumped luckily, into the deep end too soon.
Luckily, I was sober at the time. So like I started my day with that. So I didn't drive myself absolutely insane.
Oh yeah, you weren't like tripping balls. Like, no. Like, oh God, no.
No, I got there and I was like, I can't even have a sip of alcohol before I go into this thing.
No. Oh man. But no, I considered doing the Blackout one, but then, you know, gestures broadly at everything. This was back in June where we had like a vague hope of having a Halloween.
Yeah.
See how that turned out.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. So Zombie was working on this haunted maze, and it was, you know, it revived Halloween Horror Nights. The name of this haunted maze in question was House of a Thousand Corpses, and it gave Zombie an idea.
I love that. I absolutely love that he just had, I love anything like that where somebody just comes up with an idea and is like, I need to run with this further. I love that.
I need to take this idea and run with it to the hills.
Yes. And that's pretty much what he did, right? He was able to get in a room with some Universal execs, pitch the movie idea. And he later even said, I was in the office of the head of production or something, and he asked me if I had any movie ideas, and I pitched him Corpses, which was very rough at the time, but I wasn't ready, and I made it up on the spot, and he liked it. I went home, wrote a 12-page treatment, and met up with them. 2 months later, we were shooting. So it just really, he started the ball rolling, and it just rolled.
Right, and it rolled down a hill quickly. Holy
truly.
Shit.
A hill so big that we're here years later and another movie came out very recently.
It's true. But there was also, like, there was a pretty large gap between Devil's Rejects and Three from Hell, right?
Yeah, it was a really big gap, but I think the whole time, like, the demand for the Firefly family did not die out at all.
No. Yeah. Everyone was like, we want more! Even though at the end of Devil's Rejects, it's kind of like, it leaves very little room for...
I know. It was so, It was very extra, but also I was happy about it.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Anyway, we're going to talk about that, like, the sequels a little bit later.
But, okay, yeah.
So good.
And so when they started filming, the film's budget was $3 to $4 million. But the final budget is kind of up in the air. Zombie first claimed that the film was made solely with the initial $4 million, but then described like somewhere between $7 and $14 million, which is kind of a big,
that's a lot of variation
window.
There, Mr. Zombie.
Yes. And they started production in May of 2000, and they were done by that Halloween. So they filmed it pretty quickly. And
so fast.
I know, which makes sense for the type of movie it is. Like, it's just go, go, go.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. The house was launched the following year, although the title was changed to American Nightmare due to the film's shelving. Despite the name change, the house still featured numerous references to the film, and the theatrical trailer played while customers waited. So they changed the name of the maze.
Yeah, they changed it for reasons that we'll get into later, because Universal is a little bitch.
Oh, mystery. Okay. Wait. Now I just confused myself.
It's okay. I can take this if you want.
Yeah.
So we just went through like Harley just like yada yada through like a lot, like just went through like the entire production, but like there's some detail. So, you know, we had to cast this piece de resistance first.
Yeah. Okay. And they casting the Firefly family must have been really quite an ordeal.
Yes.
Other than of course Baby, but. Who was probably written exactly for Sherry Moon, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I don't even think they were married at this point, though. But, I mean, they were definitely still together. But.
Yeah. So they had to cast the family, the four teenagers, and the different police officers, and then a couple other side characters. So Sid Haig was cast as Captain Spaulding, a man who dresses as a clown and owns a gas station with a museum of curiosities and, like, a murder ride.
I love Captain Spaulding.
I know.
Wonderful.
I know. And that's somewhere I would absolutely end up if I was on a road trip. I just want to, like, put that out there. I would be dead. I would be, like, going to the Dr. Satan tree.
But also, I don't know. Okay, I don't know if I would do, like, the whole, like, I have to go find the Dr. Satan tree, but I definitely would do that really weird, creepy ride and get pushed by a suspiciously large man.
Yes.
And then as long as I was with people, like Carly, we're going to go on a road trip and then we're going to find this place.
We should do that. We should just find a bunch of random places.
Yeah, we have to do a haunted road trip for sure.
Yes, like. I'm into it. And then, so when they were casting Haig, he claimed that he had to get in touch with his own insanity for the role, which I would say he did an excellent job of.
He's so creepy.
His exact relation to the Firefly family is not revealed in the film, although, like, he's clearly related to them in some way. I mean, and I think they do get into that more in the sequels a little bit.
Yes, in the sequel it becomes very, very obvious.
Yeah. So the names of the Firefly family were all taken from the names of Groucho Marx's characters. So Captain Spaulding was from Animal Crackers in 1930. Otis B. Driftwood was a character in A Night at the Opera from 35. Rufus T. Firefly was taken from Duck Soup in 33. And lastly, Hugo Z. Hackenbush derived from A Day at the Races from 37.
I know none of these things, but I thought it was nifty in case someone else did.
Yes, that's pretty much where I was, too. I don't think I've even heard of most of those movies. I've heard of A Night at the Opera, and I think that's it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know any of them, so the way you said it, I was just like, oh, it sounds like she knows. Nope.
No, but I do love little... I guess that's like an Easter egg, essentially, right? Like, right. I love things like that. So even if it's not something that is something I've noticed, like, I just love that he did that.
See, this is one of those things that's, like, tied to, like, freaking Zombie, where it's just, like, people don't give him as much credit as a filmmaker. that
I totally agree. I also think his films are very polarizing, though. Like, agreed. I think that, like, they do get a lot of love, but they also get it. Like, it's almost
so
like...
So much.
I feel like a lot of newer directors are like that, though.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get into it later. There's a question about him in the discussion.
Yes. And so when they were casting and when they were getting the Firefly family ready, they kind of weren't really exactly sure what the feel was going to be. But eventually Zombie realized that he was wanting the audience to be rooting for the Firefly family. Like, you're not cheering for the teens to get out of there. You're kind of like waiting to see what the crazy stuff is going to be. Zombie's quoted as saying, "Yeah, I wanted the audience to cheer them. I didn't consciously think of it at the time because I was trying to make Bill and Jerry likable. But it's like when you saw Beetlejuice and you could tell all Tim Burton cared about was Beetlejuice." And I think that is just perfect of an analogy.
I think that's a great quote. Because really, Beetlejuice is not the main character of Beetlejuice, but it's still called Beetlejuice. And like,
right. And do you remember anyone else as much as you remember Beetlejuice? Of course not.
I remember, well, I mean, kind of, but that's just because I'm in love with Gina Davis. But
okay, that's fair then. Okay, that's like a valid reason. And it's hard to forget, like, Winona Ryder, you know, it's in the true. Air dancing.
Or, you know, just, like, yeah, I've gotten, one of the best compliments I've gotten is, like, someone being like, "How could you have not seen Beetlejuice? You are Lydia Deetz." And I was just like, "I appreciate the sentiment, thank you."
That is a good compliment, though.
It is.
Yeah. And getting back to the casting here, Chris Hardwick was cast as Jerry Goldsmith, a young man who was seen as hyper and wisecracking, which there's always one, right?
Wanted to punch him in the face.
I kind of wanted to punch all of them in the face, it's to be true. Honest.
Oh my God. And you know what? I don't know if this was intentional or if there was like a smart choice behind it, but God damn, Rob Zombie, the girlfriends were insufferable.
Oh my God, right? Like, what a poor sport. Like, both of them. Like, I honestly, how, like, you're on a road trip. Like, what else are you? You're going to just sit in the car and bitch, like, instead of going to the murder ride with them? That's not even going to be scary. Like, it'd be one thing if it was, like, something like a big haunted production, but it was not. Like, it was, like, a little stupid sideshow thing. Like,
come on. Like, they were not good sports at all. And they just, like, they were so, like, down. Like, they, like, I was just like, how did you guys even end up in a relationship, any of you?
I know. Also, how about, like, or we can get into it later, but just there, yeah, they were insufferable a little bit.
Absolutely.
And then Bill Hudley was portrayed by Rainn Wilson, and that was one of his first movies, although after that movie he found a lot of, you know, success, and he's been in
what
tons of things.
That was sarcasm.
I know. Well, I was just going to out myself and say that I actually don't watch The Office.
Oh God, me either.
Okay. I was like not sure if that was going to be a whole ordeal. Some people give me so much bullshit.
No, some people have like gotten straight up angry that I don't like The Office, and I'm just like, it is just not my type of humor.
None of the characters are likable at all.
It's not my thing. Like, and you know, I can hear the sounds of people unsubscribing based off of this one episode alone.
Like, I've ruined you.
You've ruined the podcast. Thanks a lot. But no, like, truly, like, I do not, like, I've tried, and also, like, I just, those types of, like, comedies are not my thing. But also, you know what? No one should be surprised by this, because it's a well-known fact on the show that I hate fun.
Okay, like, fair enough.
I always talk shit on comedies every time.
Comedy I just think is hard. Like, yeah. I think it's hard to do well.
It's true. I mean, I get why people like The Office. It's just not the type of humor that I like. Okay, so, quick aside. Have you seen Thanksgiving?
Yes, I have. Okay.
We covered it on Thanksgiving, for our Thanksgiving. And I got so much shit because I was like, I hated this movie. I hated this movie.
I think it's one of those movies where if you're not watching it, like, with a friend who's going to, like, laugh at it with you, like, yeah. I would hate to watch it alone. See, like,
you have to watch it with people, and you can't watch it sober.
That's probably true, too. Yeah.
Like,
I don't really remember if I was sober, but I was just, like, I was, like, with friend, like, a friend yeah. that I, like, goof off with. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, silly the whole time.
See, I fucked up. I watched it sober and alone. I was just like, what the shit am I watching?
Yeah. And there are some movies that are like that, that I've like sat down to watch by myself. And I'm like, I can tell that if I was in the right setting, this would be really fun. But me sitting here, like watching it on my laptop, like eating goldfish is like not very exciting.
You get to the end of it and you're like, that was actually just like kind of pathetic, actually.
Truly, truly.
But okay, yeah, that was kind of the consensus we reached also on the podcast, that you have to watch Thanksgiving with other people. It's very yeah. funny. Like, it's very quotable. Like, I enjoyed recording the episode, like talking about the movie, more than actually watching the movie.
Right. And it's like nice when you have people there so you can kind of talk about it while it's playing out too.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, sorry for my digression.
not a problem. I'm like, I'm literally laughing just even thinking about that movie. But we can go back to House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, let's talk about this significantly better and significantly more gruesome movie, surprisingly.
Absolutely. So House of a Thousand Corpses was shot on a 25-day shooting schedule. 2 weeks were spent filming on the Universal backlots. And the house featured in the film is in the same house that was used in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which kind of makes sense.
It tracks.
Yes. And he, Zombie stated that the filming on the lot was difficult at times because the amusement park was often open. And so it would ruin their takes because there would be, you know, like, noise and chaos.
The tram tours would be going by because, like, I guess the because, like, part of the tram tours would, like, stop by the house. Like, they'd be like, and here's the house used in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And, like, and it would be, like, they'd be, like, mid-filming. Someone's, like, about to get, like, fucking murked. And like,
oh, my gosh.
And, like, poor Rob Zombie is just, like, cut!
I have such conflicting, like, feelings about that because from a filmmaking perspective, like, how incredibly disrespectful to Rob Zombie. But from a fan perspective, if I was taking a tour of Universal and that happened to me, I think it would probably be one of the coolest things that ever happened to me.
Totally. But like also it's true. It's a conflicting moment, right? But however, I think since then they've kind of like changed their tune a little bit because when you go past like the sound stages and shit now, because I love Universal and I used to have a pass, now when you go do the tour, they have, like, lights and shit, and they're like, when this light is red, it means we're shooting, so please, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, which makes sense. Like, you're literally touring a film lot. Like, what do you expect?
Like, of course, like, please kindly be fucking quiet, please. Like, and even then, there's still going to be, like, one person and be like, what are they filming?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But, anyway.
Yeah, and so while they were filming, Zombie noticed that the movie ended up kind of taking on its own life and having a mind of its own in terms of the humor and the camp of it. And he's quoted saying that it turned out a little wackier and campier than I originally intended. But as we were shooting, that was the tone it was turning out to be. Movies sometimes dictate their own course, so I just sort of went with it. Which, I love that, because I think that the movie's camp actually doesn't take away from how scary the Fireflies are at all, which is so impressive.
Like, it adds, like, I don't even know how to explain it, but the camp almost makes it scarier.
Right, because they're having so much fun. Like, this is a game. It's because there are so many, horror movies where there's this, like, sadistic cat and mouse thing going on, but this is very much, like, strictly for entertainment even more than it is for violence, and I think usually it's the other way around.
Totally.
It's all very theatrical. Like, that's like the circus element of it, you know, and I love that.
Yeah, and then I think, like, it just adds almost even, like, I mean, and I think this also has a lot to do with, like, the filmmaking also, but, like, there's a surreal element to it.
Yes, absolutely. I think like he did so much stylistically to disorient you too.
Oh my god, I know. Like that whole scene when like the sheriffs are arriving and like it's all inverted and I'm just like, what is going on? Like I thought that like my TV fucked up. I was like, ah shit.
And
I was,
right. And even some of the way that like they, you know, they'll silence the scene and play like the different music that just does not match what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you're almost like, did my TV just like hook up to someone's phone? Like what's happening here?
I'm not streaming to my television.
It's like totally. And so after they were done on the lots, the last 11 days of the shoot were spent on a ranch in Valencia, California. And Zombie admits that he let the ending of his movie suck at first because he didn't know if he would have the budget for, or he didn't have the budget for a well-rounded ending. So he took a risk and he's quoted saying, I knew the ending sucked, so I let it suck. And they said, the movie's great, but the ending sucks. And I know. So they gave me more money and we shot a more elaborate ending, bigger sets, the whole razzmatazz. I would pay money if I had to just hear him say the word razzmatazz out loud. Like I don't know. I don't know that. If that interview is online anywhere, but I might look for it.
I kind of need to look for it. Right. If I find it, I'll send it to you. But
even just that one word would be so funny to me.
I just need Raz. I just honestly, Raz, because also, like, I don't know. Have you seen Eli Roth's History of Horror?
No, I really want to, though.
They're really good, but Rob Zombie is a pretty prominent guest on it. Like, especially for the first season, anyway. I haven't seen the second season yet.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
But, yeah, he's on it, and I'm just like, who is? I'm like, oh, that's definitely Rob Zombie.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly, I'm like, who is that, like, cowboy white man with dreads?
And
I'm like,
I know.
Okay, it's Rob Zombie.
Yes, who else would it be?
With sunglasses inside. I'm like, ugh.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah. He's, like, wearing aviators and a freaking, like, a hat, like, a cowboy hat. And I'm just, like, and he's, like, matte, like, a huge gray hair that, anyway, and dress.
Yes, absolutely. But, he is wild looking, though. And so something else that was interesting about the film, I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, just because it has my attention, is that Zombie later talked about using home recordings from the Manson family as an inspiration for some of those like rants done by the different members of the family, like Baby and Otis and all of those sequences. And I think that is so, put that in my notes when I was like jotting things down, rewatching the movie. I was like, I never really thought about it before, but like Baby really reminds me of Squeaky, I think, was like her nickname. I'm like, only know them by their nicknames. Like I'm so into like cults and stuff. I don't know why. I'm just a weirdo.
No, that's fine. You are among friends.
So I just did like, I've done so many deep dives into that. So I like really never paid that much attention to it. And then this time I was like, wow, like some of like you just, if you have to do it, you just do it. Like it's like just
very good, baby. Thank you.
Yeah.
For me, what really got me was Otis's. Like I was like, oh my god, you sound like a goddamn cult leader. Holy shit.
Right. And he's like, it takes all of the, I don't want to say glamour, because I think glamour was projected onto the Mansons and it wasn't really there, but like the sex appeal.
Yeah. Or like
Baby is the only one who has any sex. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It was like more like it was like a dirtier, like I don't know. It was just it was definitely, but it was just interesting that I've watched so much stuff about the Manson family and I've seen this movie so many times and like I never made the connection really until this time that I watched it.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then when I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, this is totally, like, Manson-y.
Yeah, it makes... And there's actually, even when they're in the car, one of the boyfriends goes, like, some of these Manson girls are hot.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, it's...
You know, so, yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's definitely Chris Hardwick's character.
Yes.
Such a Such an idiot. Yes, I do remember that. And I was just like, okay.
Right, like, okay, why? And honestly, again, just the actual, like, I don't know, I don't want to call them antagonists, the teenagers, whatever, or the young adults, were so unlikable. And even Ron, and even Rob Zombie really knew that. And so Universal had hoped that the film would be more about the group of kids and kind of play out like a normal horror movie where you're like, oh, like, I hope they get away, like, whatever, whatever. But it kind of went the exact opposite direction of that.
Oh, yeah. I was like, kill them more.
Right? Like, what crazy shit is going to come next?
I mean, after Fish Boy, I was just like, oh, shit, where else can we go? And it turns out a lot weirder places.
Absolutely. And you want to know something funny? This is how big of a nerd I am about sideshow stuff and, like, curiosity stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, the Fish Boy thing reminds me of, like, the Fiji Mermaid, which I don't know if...
Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I was like, I'm either going to sound crazy or she's going to be like, oh my God.
No, I love like oddity type stuff. There was like an oddity expo I was going to go to.
This year?
Yeah, right before COVID. And I was just like, oh, it's been postponed. And I was trying to get Anthony to go with me. And he was like, okay, yeah, I'm down. But I was just like, no, dude, I'm going to go buy like... taxidermied like bats for my wall, dude. Like
that sounds amazing.
You don't understand. Like this is gonna be weird as shit.
That really is like I just think it's fascinating. And it's like even the stuff that's fake, I'm like, you still had to come up with that. So it's still on some level impressive to me. Like I
wanna buy some morbid shit in jars.
I don't know if I could buy it though. Like I like don't think I really want them in my house. Like,
see, I'm like I want kind of fucking
no, weirdo-er. But I love that because like I need people's houses to go to who like do have that because I love it. I love it. I would have like a poster of it. Like it's kind of like the haunted house thing. It's like I need
to be semi removed from it.
Yes.
Here's the thing: is like you're like this like colorful, fun loving hippie. So like I get that.
Yeah, and it's like. And it's not even, like, I don't even have a problem. Like, and I'm not even, like, a vegetarian, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I just...
No, I get it.
But it's just, yeah, like, I just, there's something about, like, having a dead thing in my house. Like, I just, like...
See, that just, yeah, and I think that's just, like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the goth in me where I'm just like, yeah. Oh, I need it.
But then there's, like, there is the goth in me that's, like, I love that there are people who have it so I can look at it. Like,
I can go visit, sleep on their couch, and be like, that is a bat. And then,
yes. Like,
cool, I can leave in the morning and it be okay.
Yes, exactly.
See, we understand each other.
Totally. And the original movie actually had... had more characters in it, it had a skunk ape in it.
So, okay, are you familiar with cryptids?
Sort of.
So a skunk ape is a cryptid, and
isn't it like a Bigfoot? Like,
Yes, it is a Bigfoot-esque type creature, depending on the location.
Do you have any idea if it was like a live one or like they had
no,
one
I
of the?
I think they literally saw a skunk ape.
That's wild.
I think. I mean, I don't know how else, unless Captain Spaulding was like, we caught a skunk ape.
And right, that's what I was like. I mean, but also it's a Rob Zombie movie and like they're the Fireflies. So it's like kind of not out of the question. Like
one of the guys like nickname was Skunk Ape, which is why
they
said it in the movie. Because I was like kind of confused when I was writing the episode and I was just like, okay, there's something, like, this is, like, something is not sitting right with me, because there was, like, they mention it in the movie, however briefly, but it definitely, like, one of the characters or something, I don't remember, but either way.
But can you imagine House of 1,000 Corpses plus Bigfoot? Like...
Oh, man. God,
like, you run out of the house into the woods and there's Bigfoot.
No. They run out. Oh my gosh, that would. Oh, I mean, we have zombies in this movie, in essence. So.
Sort, but you know what though? Are the zombies real? I'm not convinced that they're not a hallucination. Truthfully,
you know what? That is a great point that I hadn't considered because like that last 15 minutes of the movie, I was just like,
it's disorienting. I'm like not convinced that they're not just like losing their minds at that point.
God, I hope so.
Also, it could be, like, you know, Dr. Satan's weird...
Yeah,
whatever.
Dr. Satan, it could be Dr. Satan's, like, I need to keep everyone alive type thing, because he was also looking pretty fucked up.
Oh my gosh, right?
So,
he really was.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
And did you, wait, I don't know if this is in, if you have this in your notes at all, but originally, the ending, and we were talking about how the original ending was bad, the ending was actually that Dr. Satan didn't exist.
What?
Yeah, the original ending was that Dr. Satan, like, didn't exist, and it was essentially, like an urban myth. And, yes, exactly, bait. Like, they had set it up so that people would come look for this tree.
And when they did, they would just find the Firefly family?
Yes. And then,
Do I like that more? I don't know.
I think that if the movie had a different tone, like, I do like that type of story, yes. But I think with the type of, with the craziness of the movie, I think it would have been a little bit, like...
It would have fallen a little bit flat, sure.
Yeah.
But also, like, I can definitely see that being the original ending of the movie, and then Rob Zombie being like, if you give me, you know, $10 million more dollars...
Right. And I also think, like, he even says that initially it wasn't quite so campy and, like, over the top. So, like, I'm thinking, like, if it was toned down and more serious, mm-hmm. it would, I think, work better. But I think, like, with the style of the movie, like, it needed a more, like, it needed to continue being a little ridiculous. And, like, totally, Dr. Satan yeah. was a little ridiculous, but in a good way.
It's a little ridiculous.
Okay, very. But but also for Rob Zombie, I would say, like, a little.
It's true. It could have been worse.
Yes, absolutely.
Until you get to the very end, though. Like, and he's just, like half a man with, like...
I know, yeah, he's messed up looking. Yeah.
I had to pause so I could cough. I don't have COVID. Don't do drugs.
That's total. That was honestly one of the reasons I asked if I could mute, because I was like, if I take, like, if I smoke, like, and I cough...
Bong hits, the podcast.
Not bong hits. That's like too, that would be too disruptive, I think.
All of a sudden in the back, you just hear like.
Right, bubbles. It's ambiance, guys.
It's the ambiance sound. This week on the Horrible People's Podcast, we're going to get high and talk about House of a Thousand Corpses. Which is,
oh my, like, gosh. But what if you did, like, a 420 episode with that, like, evil bong movie?
Dude, it's in the works.
I love it. Okay.
Not necessarily evil bong.
But one of that, yeah.
We want to do, like, a 420 episode. Like,
have you seen Idle Hands?
Actually, Idle Hands is in the running currently.
Beautiful.
Idle Hands or Scary Movie.
Oh, yeah, any of them.
Yeah. Evil, I did mention After Thanksgiving, I was like, okay, this is on the same brand of, like, weird sentient things that should not be sentient. And I was like, Evil Bong is a great example of that. And they were just like, what?
It's wild.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Man, of course you have.
And I actually watched it one year on 420. Like, I watched, like, a couple of that. I don't really remember how many there are.
So beautiful.
But I don't remember. As the day went on, I, like, kind of remember less and less about the movie.
Okay, 420 is on a Tuesday this week, or this upcoming year, but that's fine. We'll do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we make it work. We make it work.
It work. But, oh my gosh. Yeah, no, this is not a 420 episode, but...
it is now.
It is now. What happens when the horror stoner nerds get together?
Pretty much.
Anyway.
Oh, where were we?
We were just talking about, I don't know, just so much.
We were talking about the skunk ape. We were talking about the Mansons.
We were talking about Manson.
Yes. Oh, okay, okay.
Finally, they finished the fucking movie.
Yes.
Just like we finished the conversation.
Wait, but then it got shelved for 3 years.
Yeah, it did.
Because Universal thought that they wouldn't release the movie with anything less than an NC-17 rating.
The MPAA sucks.
I mean, movie ratings in general are kind of absurd. I mean, parents need to just take responsibility for their children, period. That's my stance on that.
But also, like, at this point, like, ratings have become so, like, a PG-13 rating in 1984 means something completely different than, like, a PG-13 rating in, like, 2014, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Like, you can get away with so much more shit now.
But also, somehow, so much less. It's, like, very weird.
Well, certain things, like, on certain moral grounds, like, you can get away with certain things, and then others, it's just like, no, it's just like, is that a clavicle?
Inappropriate.
Cover it up. You freaking slut. Like, you
literally.
Know?
It's because you know how teenage boys are with shoulders, right?
They can't see a bra strap. They'll nut. Like, they can't.
Ugh, dress codes.
Don't get me started.
Right. And yeah, so they shelved it for 3 years, and Zombie reacquired the rights to the film when they wouldn't distribute it. And he tried to release it with MGM, but they refused to release it after a pretty controversial remark by Zombie claiming that the company had no morals for releasing the film.
It was a compliment!
Yes, and I understand, and I think that knowing who said it, anybody would know what that meant.
Like, I was just like, I know, like, they were just purposely being obtuse on that one, right? Like, they yeah. had to have been.
And it kind of, honestly, the first thing that comes into my head is, like, I wonder a bit if maybe they were already wanting to scrap the idea and, like, just needed,
yeah,
like, something to, some reason. And I'm not sure, but eventually it was sold to Lionsgate, and they finally released the film in April of 2003.
Woo! And wherever...
Thank goodness.
Wherever that ambulance was going, they finally got where they were going to go. Ah, San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about the release of this movie. So... House of a Thousand Corpses received its theatrical release on April 11th, 2003. The film made its debut in the United Kingdom at Fright Fest first and was the fastest selling event of the night. They were just like, hell yeah. It made $3,460,666, which just sounds like a PR stunt.
I love it. I love everything about that.
On a limited opening weekend, while boasting $2,522,026 on its official opening. The fact that I can still read numbers while high is awesome.
Yes, it's because you're brilliant. And how funny that it was first released in the UK, because it's such an American movie.
It's such an American movie. It's so, yeah, it has, oh my gosh, I'm surprised, honestly.
And I'm surprised it would do well somewhere else a little bit.
Truly, on it, like, I'm surprised, because the UK is notorious for hating gross American movies.
They like gross movies from other places.
It's specifically France.
I mean, I also like gross movies from France, though, so, I mean, like, I get it.
Too.
Speaking of which, watch Martyrs. Watch Martyrs. I'm saying it on here so you can be held accountable.
Hold me accountable for my actions. No, I know. I know. I've talked about it before. We covered High Tension. Like, forever ago.
Oh, I think I remember talking to you about High Tension. Yeah, it was...
I think that's one of our first horror movie conversations, talking about how, like, it's a fucked up, gross movie, and it has a horrible message.
It's so good until the twist. Like,
it's so good until the last, like, 10
And the twist minutes. Would have been good in a different context. Like,
this is one of the... It was one of the one instances where, like, just making it gay wouldn't have made it better.
Right. And it was, like, one of those things where at first I didn't think about it. And then, like, I don't even think I thought about it before you said it. And then you said it and I was like, oh, fuck.
Anyway, I'm not digressing.
Yes, you are. But it's okay. It's probably my fault.
It's fine. When we talked about French movies, then you told me to watch Martyrs and here we are. So.
Yes.
Anyway. Back to House of a Thousand Corpses. So it went on to gross $12,634,962 in the United States alone, with an additional $4,194,183 accumulated worldwide, with a reported worldwide gross of $16,829,545. Woo!
Yeah.
So, according to Zombie, Lionsgate Entertainment made back their investment in the film on the very first day. And very shortly afterwards approached Zombie about a sequel to the film. Like, they're like, hey, want to make a sequel?
I mean, he literally did make a superhero movie about a family of serial killers. Who wouldn't want to see more? Who wouldn't want to... How could you not... I want a prequel. I still want a prequel.
But you can't really make a prequel without Sid.
I know. Unless
makes you, like, want to so age sad. Everyone down, and then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then Rob Zombie's not going to make a movie without Sherry Moon.
Ugh. Sherry Moon could play any age, and it wouldn't even matter.
It's
Come
true.
On.
She's, like, ageless.
She literally looks the same. Like, let's just...
I know. I was like, what? Anyway. So, shocker. House of a Thousand Corpses received generally negative critical reception upon its release. It has a 20% Rotten rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 85 reviews with a weighted average of 3.43 out of 10.
Wow. I'm not surprised that it was, like, poorly received initially, but I'm surprised that it has maintained
honestly, that. I do just think that, like, it just got tanked, and then it couldn't come back.
Yeah. It's like that's a bummer.
Yeah. I don't know. So, the site's consensus reads, there's an abundance of gore in this derivative horror movie, but little sense or wit.
Oh, I could not disagree more. There's not enough gore, and there is plenty of wit.
Yes.
And plenty of sense, too, frankly, in my opinion.
It
just might not be the kind of sense people like.
It's true. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't mean it doesn't make sense. So, Frank Scheck of The Hollywood Reporter wrote that the film, quote, lives up to the spirit but not the quality of its inspirations. And it, quote, is ultimately a cheesy and ultra-gory exploitation horror flick. And, quote, strangely devoid of thrills, shocks, or horror. This is incorrect.
I think that, first of all, I don't know who that is. I don't, like, know film reviewers, but okay. But I will say, like, to call House of a Thousand Corpses ultra gory is absurd. Like, I mean, that person cannot be, like, a real horror buff. And that doesn't mean everybody has to like gore. Like, it could be too much gore for a person. But ultra gory, like, have you seen Saw? Like, what?
Well, that's the thing. I think because a lot of people compare this to the Saw franchise. And I'm like, they're very different.
No. It's a game. Like, I get that part of it. But it's not gruesome. Like, it's not gory in that sense where you're, like... You're feeling it in your body, like it's
gory, but it's not, and it's I think it's like that gruesome versus like it's gruesome, but it's not gratuitous given the circumstances.
Yeah, like if they don't dwell on anything really.
I mean, kind of. But
well, I mean, comparatively.
But no, I mean, like if we're comparing it to like Saw, for example, like Saw is just like they're just like. Break out the blood machine. Versus this, like, it's a little bit more real. Not realistic, but I'm just like, okay, this is the appropriate level of gore that I would expect if there was a homicidal family killing teenagers.
Right.
Like, you know?
Right, and I even think, like, and I think they do well to balance it out, like, in that scene where Baby is cutting off his hair.
Oh, no, she is scalping him.
I know, but before that, I'm saying, yeah. Like, where she's, like, it's kind of, like, to show, because at first she is just snipping his hair, and then they play.
Being, like, you know, a little tease.
Yes, and so I do think, like, I think it all is, like, done in this way that just shows the way they, like, slowly up the stakes and up the stakes and up the stakes.
Yeah. No, yeah, totally, I agree. It's done, I think. Well, and not ultra gory.
Yes.
I've definitely seen more gory films, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Anyway, James Bradage of filmcritic.com wrote that the film was simply, quote, hick after hick, cheap scary image after cheap scary image, lots of southern accents and psychotic murders, unquote, and was, quote, too highbrow to be good cheap to be a good cheap horror movie and too lowbrow to be satire and too boring to bear the value of a ticket, unquote.
Wow.
That's harsh.
Yeah. That's like a pile on. It's just like
pick something to like, because like basically this review is just like saying there's nothing redeemable about it.
Yeah, and it's funny because the first half, like hick after hick, hick cheap scary image, like that part is actually all pretty accurate. Like, but then like too highbrow to be a cheap horror movie, too lowbrow, like that's very aggressive. And I also think it misses the point, yeah, like, truthfully, because I think a major point of this movie is that it's fun. Like, and I think that is value in and of itself. And I think that sometimes people really expect too much. Like,
I know. I'm just like, come on. So New York Times also had a negative review of the film, writing, quote, as much as film buffs might enjoy recognizing references to Motel Hell and other driving classics, Mr. Zombie's encyclopedic approach to the genre results in a crowded, frenzied film in which no single idea is developed to a satisfying payoff, unquote.
See, that one I think is a little bit more fair. And I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do think, first of all, it's absolutely a crowded and frenzied film. I mean, I love that. Yes, I like that. But I will say, like, on some level, there isn't a satisfying payoff because, for me, the whole Dr. Satan thing doesn't play out enough. Like, I have so many questions.
I know. Like, it's the beginning, and then it's the end, and it kind of, like,
it's like, okay, he's real, but that's literally all we know.
Right. And Anyway, the point is it's at the beginning, it's at the end, and then in between we have some really great, like, teenage murders going on. You know, like, we have, like, a whole other story in between the two, and, like, you know.
Yes.
And I needed more in between.
Yes.
But, anyway, since its initial release, thankfully, the film has gone on to gain a cult following. In his 2007 interview for the Blu-ray release, Christopher Monfette of IGN called the film, quote, fun as hell, writing, quote, House of a Thousand Corpses is a messy film, veering this way and that way and that across the genre map with no discernible destination, but viewed less a movie and more as an experience. The film offers a certain degree of inspired insanity and a healthy dose of carnival-like madness, unquote.
That is, I think, that could be taken really right from my brain. And I think that that's kind of what I meant when I said I think sometimes people expect too much. Not even, and too much wasn't even really the right way of saying it, but just the wrong thing. Like,
and that's something that, like, this movie, when people watch it now, like in you know, 2020 for the first time, I think that they're just like, I don't know, because right now in 2020, a lot of people are expecting like A24 quality horror films all the time. And I'm just,
yes,
like, ah. And I'm just like, give me my schlocky southern, like, you know.
Yes, just nonsense, essentially.
Yeah. Especially where it's just like, you have like there's a liquor store literally called Pussy Liquor in this movie.
Can I tell you that this was the first time I ever caught that pun?
Really?
You know what? I never, like, because it's a fun movie, I've never watched it with, like, too much thought. And since we were going to do this, when I rewatched it, I, like, had my brain turned on a little bit more.
You know? I was a little more observant as I was
watching. Yeah, and I was, like,
into a microphone.
Yes, and it's so funny because people have shirts, people, you know what I mean? It's such a thing. And I know the name of it, like, Red Hot Pussy Liquor. Like, I know that that's what the place is called, but I just, like,
it just didn't connect.
It just did not ever connect for me until this time. And I was like, holy shit. Red Hot Pussy Liquors. Like, what?
Like, what? Oh, it's so good. And then, like, that song that's playing, that's also, like, one of Rob Zombie's songs. Like, he wrote it for the movie. Like,
and baby's assless chaps. Like, what? Like, just...
Her assless chaps that also is, like, a jean thong, which looks so uncomfortable.
It does. It does.
It looks so uncomfortable. Like, I was just like, wow. Dedication to the part, Sherry Moon. Like,
truly.
Holy shit. Because, like, also, that is what she's wearing through the end of the movie and subsequently into the Devil's Rejects.
Oh, my. I don't even think I really, like, registered that.
I remember.
Oh, wow.
Because, I remembered, and I'll get into why when we get to discussion. But, oh, my God. Yeah, I was just like, holy shit. Anyway.
Wow.
So, Zombie has acknowledged the film's cult status, stating, quote, "Now, a decade later, it's become a pretty loved movie among people. It's great that we have this big celebration. I love seeing Sid Haig and other actors get such great attention from it. The funny thing is, 10 years becomes a long time. I'll meet someone who's 18 years old, and that's always been a film that they've loved." It's funny that the film's been around that long to be like that for some people, unquote. What 18-year-old has always loved House of a Thousand Corpses?
You know what, though? Okay, not relatable for me. I literally, when I was a kid, I saw Scary Movie 3 in theaters and slept with my light on for, like, weeks.
Oh, no.
Like, but, so I was really, really afraid of horror movies. But I do remember, like, I think I had friends whose parents were into horror movies who, like, had the exposure before they actually watched the movies, like, to the culture of it and to, like, oh, like, we like being, like, why do you like horror movies, mom and dad, right? Like, oh, we like being scared in a controlled way, whatever, what, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, like, and I think it's, and I don't even think there's an age. I think it's just a matter of, like, is your kid the type of kid who's going to spend 2 weeks with their lights on, or is your kid going to, like, be scared for a night and, like, have a good time?
Right. Well, that's the thing, is, like, and this is part of where I'm like, I wish Anthony could have joined us for this, because he grew up with that. Like, his parents loved horror, and, like, he grew up watching horror films. And, like, I did not have that either. I didn't start watching horror films until college. So I was just like, I don't know. But also, I'm just like, I just can't imagine, like, someone who's, like, always loved this movie and has seen it from a very young age, just because, like, this movie, like, as much as I love it, and I think I think like a lot of people should watch it, it is deeply inappropriate.
It is. It is. But also, to be fair, I watched, like, the Animaniacs reboot yesterday, and it was so inappropriate. So, like,
was it really?
Yes, yes. I mean, and the old ones too, and, like, Rugrats, and, like, all of these things have adult humor in it. And the truth is, kids are either going to understand that stuff or they're not, and they're going to hear it anyway from somewhere else. Like,
good point. And what you said, ultimately, it's up to the parents. If you want to let your kids see it, totally cool. It's none of my fucking business.
Right. It's just, like, take responsibility for what they've seen. Like, if they're really freaked out, like, that is your responsibility to deal with.
Totally. But yeah, so I just think that's really funny. Like, first of all, an 18-year-old being like, I've always loved that movie, to the director of it, which I just, like, I mentioned, oh my gosh, my brother visited and we watched The Big Lebowski, and he was just like, this movie's really old, isn't it? And I was like,
Yeah, I've been getting my 14-year-old cousin into horror. Well, she kind of got into horror on her own, but I'm like, now grabbing her and dragging her into the deep end, essentially. She, like, took a little step in, and I was like, let's do it. And it is sometimes hard for me to show her, like, older movies. But I think, like, there have been some that have gone well. I think it's just a matter of, like, practical versus digital effects.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast for more than 3 episodes knows that I am such, like, a stickler for practical effects.
Same. Like, I took her to see The Exorcist.
Yeah.
At the Frida, at their outdoor screening during COVID, actually. We did, like, the drive-in thing.
Wonderful.
And she really liked that one. And I was like, see, this is, like, that's what I was trying to explain to her. Is, like, some of them know what they have and work with it, and some of them are just trying to have fun. And it's like, you have to just distinguish.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, so, Back to House of a Thousand Corpses. Okay, so he's actually, Rob Zombie has gone on to kind of dismiss the film following its release, saying, because this was his first film, this is his directorial debut, saying, quote, "The first film I directed, which people seem to love, is just a calamitous mess." That's a great word.
Wow, what an insult. What a self-deprecating statement, Rob Zombie.
Well, when it came out, it seemed like everyone hated it. Now everyone acts like it's beloved in some way. All I see is flaw upon flaw upon flaw upon flaw, unquote.
Oh my God, poor Rob Zombie.
He just is so harsh. Like,
yeah, wow.
Well, I mean, I get it. Like, if this is like your directorial debut, like it's your very first movie, you've gone on to direct other stuff. I just think it's kind of funny that like all the other stuff that he's directed and is assumingly more proud of, that most people are just like, eh, it's not as good as House of a Thousand Corpses.
Right.
Like, gosh. But also, that being said, like, this is, like, I haven't seen a whole lot of his other stuff.
It's definitely, like I said, it's really polarizing. Like, it's, you still haven't seen Three from Hell, right?
No, I haven't, not yet.
Okay. I would say, like, more than Devil's Rejects, if you like Three from Hell, you'll like his other stuff.
Okay, yeah, because I love Devil's Rejects.
I think that you'll like it. I mean, it's literally like just you know how Devil's Rejects kind of upped the stakes from House. It's kind of like another upping the stakes. It's like, okay, like we cranked it up a notch. Now we're cranking it up another notch.
How far can we crank this notch?
Yes, like this amp goes up to 11.
Okay, so something that we always do on this podcast is we go over Letterboxd reviews. I don't know if you're familiar with Letterboxd, but we love
I'm
it.
I'm not.
Okay, Letterboxd is like just a public ranking, like people just write reviews on movies. And it's really funny. Like, people just do really funny reviews.
Okay, cool.
I don't think that's its purpose, but that's what we use it for.
Okay.
So, House of a Thousand Corpses has an average 3.1 rating with out of over 30,000 reviews. So, kind of low, because it's out of 5. But Colin, with 3 stars, says, quote, "This is how I imagine the slightly racist white country girls with Bible passages in their Instagram bios at my university act when they go home."
Oh, that's amazing.
I agree. Okay. Todd, with 4 stars, says, quote, quoting the movie, "That was so badass! Dr. Satan! Dr. Satan!" Jerry. Bloated pre-sobriety Chris Hardwick is just as annoying in this film as he seems to be in real life. I like this movie.
Okay. Interesting.
God, Chris Hardwick is annoying. But also, that quote was just so funny when he's just like going around like throwing up the goats and it's just like, "Dr. Zeta!"
Well, especially because it was literally like 10 seconds of information.
Right. You got nothing. You just got the basics. You got the bare bones about the story. And like, he's just like, "I have to find this tree." Like, Jerry, you're an idiot. And then also, he's like super hyped. Everyone else, including Rainn Wilson at this point, is just like, can we just go?
And then he's like, "You don't have to act cool in front of your chick, bro."
Like, shut up. Like, I think he's just tired.
I think you're just too much.
Being a little exhausting. So Christy, with 4.5 stars, says, quote, "This is camp excellence. They were literally just vibing," unquote.
Yes. Perfect.
And then Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, with 0.5 star, "I don't remember this episode of The Office," unquote. And then Aaron, E-R-I-N, beer emoji, with 4 stars, quote, "Honestly, has no right being so hilarious while being so disgustingly bizarre," unquote.
I love that you did that with 4 stars. Like, that's the type of review I would give it. Like, it doesn't sound like a compliment, but it absolutely is a compliment.
Totally a compliment. So, Toby Hooper was a big fan of this film upon its release. As a result, he offered Sherry Moon Zombie a supporting role in his then upcoming film, The Toolbox Murders, in 2004, having loved her character. She initially turned down the role as she did not have a desire to be a full-time actress. And she only appeared in this film because Rob Zombie was her, at the time, boyfriend. she eventually relented as a personal favor because Hooper and Zombie are friends, which I didn't know. She has not appeared in a film not directed by her now husband since.
Yeah, and she's in. So, it's funny that she didn't want to be an actress, and now she's like
she's,
been in
now
so
she's
many.
Just known for being Rob Zombie's crazy wife.
It's kind of almost like the Helena Bonham Carter, Johnny Depp, and
totally.
Tim Burton.
Yes, absolutely. Only,
but it's like, only but it's like this. It's but it's Bill Moseley, Sherry Moon Zombie.
Yeah, pretty much. So the success of this film led to two sequels released in 2005 and 2019, respectively, and later a seasonal haunted house attraction at Universal Studios Hollywood, but we'll discuss The Devil's Rejects and Three from Hell eventually on another episode because they do deserve their own treatment. So yeah, let's discuss this movie. We do not have time to go into the plot, but, let's talk about this movie. We've kind of been like, we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later. And we've been digressing all evening, so.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's what I, it's kind of my favorite thing. so let's, yeah, tell, like, your thoughts on this movie. Tell me a little bit about your overall experience with it.
Well, I obviously am a very big fan of this movie, if that has not been made abundantly clear.
Super clear.
And I actually don't even remember, like, when I first saw this movie, because I don't really remember having not seen it, mm-hmm. which I didn't see it super young, but I must have seen it early in my horror career. And I think that's probably why I don't remember it, because I think I saw it in the days where I wasn't, like, into horror. I was just, mm-hmm. like, watching movies, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't really remember the first time I watched it. But I think that what really made me love it more was when I finally saw The Devil's Rejects. Mm. Because I needed more information. I, like, you know what I mean? Like, I did like it. I really liked it. But I was, like, also, like, I have so many questions.
questions. They need answers.
Yes. And so I did like it. And then I saw that one. And I was like, now I'm obsessed with this family. They're amazing. Like, can I go live with them?
It's a murderous family. So for me, I actually saw The Devil's Rejects first.
Oh.
Yes.
Interesting.
I saw The Devil's Rejects first at the behest of my ex. We watched it, and I was just like, holy shit. So to go back to my initial point when we were talking about pussy liquor, So Sherry Moon Zombie is wearing, like, these, like, really weird assless jeans. Like, they're kind of assless chaps, but they're really just, like, boot cut, like, jeans with no ass and, like,
yeah.
weird jean thong. That is what she's wearing for, like, a good chunk of Devil's Rejects. And I know this because when I first saw it, I was like, why is her ass out? Like, what, like, led her to this point? Like, that she is, this is just, like, her personal style. And it turns out the answer is yes.
Yeah, basically
like,
is.
It's just what baby wears.
Like, it happened to be Halloween, but it also was not a Halloween costume.
No, I do just think that's how she dresses.
yeah, because there's that scene where she's in her, like, pajama bottoms that are, like, 10 sizes too small, and the whole, like,
yeah,
the whole, like, top of her ass is out.
Like, the whole top, and I was just like, what is going on? Because she changes into that, like, the amount of outfit changes that Sherry Moon Zombie undergoes in this movie is fucking unreal for a movie that takes place over 2 days. Like, she had, like, 3 outfit changes over the span of, like, a dinner party.
And especially, like, the really glamorous one. Like, it's like, wow, you really did that. You really did that fast. You're used, like, to this process.
You're used, like, she was in theater or something. She was like, I need to do some quick changes. Like, but, like, yeah, so for me, with my experience with this, I saw Devil's Rejects, and then I saw House of a Thousand Corpses later, and I was like, wow, this makes a lot more sense. kind of tying it all together. But that being said, I generally, some people are like, oh, like, can you, like, I wholeheartedly believe you can watch The Devil's Rejects without having seen House of a Thousand Corpses. They have very different vibes as movies.
Yeah.
Like, they're almost, like, different genres, almost.
Absolutely. Because Devil's Rejects has like almost like a Western vibe to me. Like it's very much horror, but like it also
it's like a road movie.
Yeah.
Like it's a, you know what I mean? It's a road trip movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does have that Western vibe to it for sure. Like has almost like a From Dusk Till Dawn kind of thing.
Yes, yes. That's a, that's a perfect analogy. Without the supernatural element, it is it is. It's like this just like wild ride that you're just on and like you're just like, where the hell am I gonna end up?
Yeah, super, and like also, you know, the deserty kind of vibe. But But yeah, so I first saw it in college, I think. Yeah, so, and I saw Devil's Rejects, and then I was like, okay, I need to know more. And then I eventually saw House of a Thousand Corpses, and I was like, okay, different movie, different vibe. This is more of like, almost like your traditional kind of slasher. This is your Texas Chainsaw Massacre homage. But both really great movies.
Absolutely. And very like gritty and just, it's like you almost need a shower. Like
after you're just like, okay, I feel disgusting.
It's like, do I have dust and blood on me? Like what?
I know this movie in like 4D would just be so bad. All bad. But yeah. Let's see. So, this movie was so quickly written off as kind of just like another torture porn flick, but then ended up being praised for its innovation later. What do you think contributed to this?
I think that a lot of the time, like, these things just need to age a bit. Like, I think people are, they need to find their niche, right? Like, I think that that's a big part of it, because I think that there are still people who feel like it is another torture porn flick.
Right. I mean, which you need to give it time to find its people.
Right, exactly. And I think that this is not, like, a movie for just, like, the casual viewer, necessarily. I think anyone could probably have fun watching it, but, like, to actually like it, I do think, like, it's not for everyone, by any means.
Well, there's also, like, so many, like, subtleties, and I say that completely, like, not bullshitting, like, if you're, like, a super robust fan of the genre, a lot of this is gonna be like, oh, this is clearly, like I said earlier, this is kind of like an homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right, and even, and, like, it's funny, because I was just thinking about, this had only just occurred to me, but I wrote down the thing about the Manson family, and I also wrote down about Ed Gein, who was, like, the guy who was in the inspiration for, like, Psycho and Texas Chainsaw and all, you know, Leatherface. And so it is, like, there are a lot of these references that you see repeatedly through the genre, and even the circusy things and the sideshow things, like the Fiji mermaid thing, you know what I mean? Like, I love that. Like, and just these, like, little nods at things that might just go over people's heads because they don't care about them.
Right.
Which is fine.
And it's totally fine. And that's one of the things that I think is so kind of like brilliant about this movie is it plays to both camps, right? Like if you don't get those things, like that's fine. You're still going to get a damn good horror film. But if you do get all of those things, it adds an extra level of experience to it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what makes it really cool. And I think getting it to like once you know it found its people, I think that's what really kind of like cemented it as one of like a classic, you know?
Yeah,
like even most people know what House of a Thousand Corpses is, even if they're not even a horror fan. Like they're like,
right,
that sounds like a grotesque movie that, you know, or at least,
and I think
that
that's part of it. And I think that's actually part of like going back to the torture porn thing. Like I think the name of it almost like gives you this idea that that's what it's going to be, because there definitely are, and I'm very liberal with the amount of like violence I like make room for. I mean, you know, no, I mean like for context, you know, I'm like obsessed with Martyrs. Like I think Serbian film is one of the best movies ever made. Like
really?
I know that's ridiculous. I know how that sounds, but like, I haven't even watched it
because I just feel like it's just gonna like fuck me up.
It probably will, and like, but it's supposed to. Like, and that doesn't mean, and that's not for everyone. But I'm just to say, like, but I do think that like things like Hostel, is torture porn. Like, I don't even dislike it, but it is like, to me, it's meaningless. And like,
I can call, like, I mean, you know, I call, you know, call a spade a spade or whatever.
Right.
The Hostel franchise is just like one of those things that I just am very like, or saw, or like the traditional torture porn, like I am so into from like an American perspective, and like, cause like it goes into like all this whole fucking thing, like song and dance about like 9/11 and
right,
and like I'm just like, ooh, like from like a psychological perspective, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes.
and why America needed torture porn when, or like why it became so popular.
Right. It's, well, we just live in, we live in such a like violent and dynamic country. It's like an outlet. Totally. It really is.
But then you have, but then there's like, there's always too far with movies like Hostel and Saw. It was like too far without actually going too far, versus movies like this, or movies like a Serbian film, or movies that like truly like are like a kind of like deeper on a psychological level.
Yes.
That, are supposed to be disturbing, like straight up, like, yeah, disturbing.
Yeah, and there's a difference between something being like, this is gonna gross you out, and like, this is gonna like disturb and disgust you. Absolutely. Like in your core. And I think that that is the thing about a Serbian film, like it does go too far, but also it's trying to go too mm-hmm. far. Like that's kind of, I don't know. I could talk about that movie for, like, a million hours.
There's so many people who are just like, never watch it. There's no point. It's just gross for the sake of being gross.
And I so strongly disagree with that. It's fine. And I think, like, the truth is, some people really can't see past that. And I don't even mean that as a criticism, because there are plenty of movies that other people think are really good, and I just can't see past certain parts of it. And, like, and so I totally get it, but I think that is a horribly inaccurate statement. Like,
well, I mean, that's what makes horror, like, such a fun, like, I guess, dynamic genre, right?
Because,
yes, like, so many people have different interpretations of different things based off of, like, life events and just, like, just how people's brains are, right?
And right, how, like, and it's also, personal. Like, what's... And it's what scares you, like what yeah. really gets under your skin, and like, do you really? And I think the truth is, not everybody who likes horror really likes to like go there and like have things really get to them, right. And that's fine. Like that's not, you know, that is not for everyone.
And there are some people who like, again, like have a I don't want to say like surface level appreciation for the genre, but people who like horror but aren't, you know, like have a horror podcast or have
right. Well, and I think that it's kind of like one of those things where like people, there's a difference between liking horror movies and liking scary movies.
Agreed.
Right. And like, I think that people like scary movies and then they're like, oh, I'm into horror. And it's like, no, you're not. You're into like one of a million horror subgenres, oh, which is, gosh, which is fine. Yeah. They're fun. I like them too, but yeah, it's not the same as like, you know, I see people who like talk about like Midsommar and they're like, this isn't even horror. And I'm like, if you're not horrified by this, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like,
there's so much, like, we can't, we don't have time to unpack all of this. But like, please sit down, watch my TED Talk about why Midsommar is a terrifying movie.
But also the best movie ever.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're digressing, but that's fine. That's what discussion is for. But like for me, like, or kind of like one of the things that like horror and why it's so personal, that's what makes it such like a fun, innovative, like dynamic genre, is like everyone gets to interpret it differently, and you have different levels of like interaction with certain movies, is kind of what you're talking about, because like everyone has a favorite subgenre.
Right.
And it you're right, it completely goes back to what you're saying. It reflects what scares you. Right?
Right.
For me, I love found footage. My brother,
I do too,
hates found footage. He thinks it's the stupidest genre on the planet. And I'm like, what is wrong with
it? It just has to be done. If it's done well, it is scary as fuck.
Totally. And even if it's not done well, I'll still watch it and I'll still appreciate it.
Oh, totally. And it's funny because for me, it's not really even a subgenre, but the things I like the most actually tend to be things that really push the envelope, like that, right. Which I hate, like being one of those people, like give me all the most extreme horror movies. But like there is something about it that it really it gets to me, but in a way that makes me really think. And I just, I don't know, I like yeah. it.
Well, and that's what I like about horror fans is, like, we've kind of, like, taken this genre and, like, kind of, like, melded it into our personalities, right?
Absolutely. And like, it's, like, it's just, like, it's weirdos finding weird things, yeah, right?
Exactly, right? Like, I, like, the for me, even just doing this podcast, like, it gave me such, like, a better understanding of, like, me and, like, my own interests and giving me, like, something to, like, channel all of my weird, creepy things that I like, channeling all of that energy into, like, one productive thing, which is horror films.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understand. Yes, I relate very much.
So I think a lot of other horror fans like kind of have a similar experience in it, where it's like, this is my personality now.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the sequels briefly. Which one is your favorite? Because you've seen all three.
Yeah.
I've only seen this one and the next one.
Well, that's really hard, but okay. So my simple answer is probably Devil's Rejects, but it should have been Three from Hell. I just love Sid Haig so much. Like you know what I mean? Yeah. Like Three from Hell is so fun. And like, I love particularly the evolution of like Baby's character and her relationship with Otis. Like it's so much fun. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it eventually, because it is like her like deterioration mentally in jail is just like a delight. That sounds fucked up, but whatever.
Oh no. I mean, given the context of this movie, yes. Like you can absolutely like take delight in that.
Right. Like it's just truly like it's because she just it's almost like every time you're like she gets a little crazier and crazier and a little more like over the top. And so, like I said, it's like, I'm going to push the envelope. Okay. Now I'm going to push it further. Now I'm going to push it further. And it really shows through her character specifically, but also like Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding, but also in general, like is such a big piece of the family to me. So like, it's hard for me to really say that Three from Hell is my favorite.
Okay. For me, just because it was the first one I watched, like, Devil's Rejects is such, like, a important... I don't know. It flipped a switch for me in my, like, horror brain, I think. Which is why I love it so much. But, yeah, I think Devil's Rejects, out of the two I've seen, is my favorite.
I actually think I like both sequels better than I like House of a Thousand Corpses.
Which is saying something, because you really like House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes. Like, this is, like, one of those very few movie series where there isn't one where you're like, ugh.
You're just like ugh. All right,
can whatever. We just pretend that one didn't happen? Like, right. There's none of that here.
That's wonderful. Okay. You have to replace the entire Firefly family with a different family from horror. Which one are you picking and why?
Oh, wow. Like who would I want to see doing the stuff they're doing?
Like literally you have to transplant another horror family into the same exact, like, words, actions, et cetera, of the Firefly family from this movie. What horror film or what horror family are you picking?
I mean, my first instinct is like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that would like make sense. Mm-hmm. But also, I like kind of think it would just be funny if we could take someone from something, say, like Amityville Horror, and just like you know what I mean, like, okay. Like in a serious way, probably Texas Chainsaw Family, but in like the Sawyers, but in like my mind, like the first thing I was thinking about is like how hilarious it would be if Baby was like a 7-year-old.
See, I was thinking like, okay,
and how much scarier it would actually be too.
See, we were kind of thinking on the same vibe. However, mine was gonna be an aged up, appropriate Addams Family.
That would actually be awesome too. I just there's something to me, obviously not with like the sexual components, but right. I think like, can you imagine like a child version of Baby who's like not so like explicit, who's just scary and like batshit insane.
Scary. I mean, truly, like the fact. Okay, one of the things I will say, because like I am on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but I have one. Yes. there's a really popular sound, like, going around of Baby from House of a Thousand Corpses when she captures one of the insufferable girlfriends, and she's just like, shoo, shoo, Seth made it.
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah, that whole bit is on TikTok, and I was like, what is going on?
That's so funny. I'm probably going to end up, like, I don't have TikTok, but I might, like, look for some of those.
Some of them are pretty funny, but I was just like, wow, we have made it. But, yeah, that whole little, like, bit made it on, and I saw it, and I was just like, okay, cool. but... Yeah, so I forget where I was going with that. But, no, Baby's crazy. And I love that about her.
Yeah.
But seeing a, like, not sexualized version, or sexual anyway.
Yeah.
There was part of, like, of this movie that was NC-17. There was a moment where it was rated NC-17. And Rob Zombie had to cut out some parts, including Baby having sex with a dead body.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, I assume you have you seen Necromantic?
No.
Oh my god. That's the first thing that came into my head. Oh, that's a wild ride. The first one is okay, but the second one is really fun.
Oh, great.
But
that sounds like a wild ride. But no,
it's
like,
very strange.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. But no, in this one, yeah, in this one, like, parts of, like, there was also like a, like, more somehow like bloody parts that were like cut out, and like but yeah, all of it is like, it's not online, but like it tells you what scenes were cut out. But yeah,
right.
but it, so that was part of it, and then that was supposed to be, like, explored later in Devil's Rejects, which it didn't, if I recall correctly, but I guess that was just too far for Rob Zombie. but, okay, let's see. So, for our last question, rate this movie out of 5 creepy clowns.
I would probably give it a 4.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah, like a solid 4.
A strong, solid 4. Like,
yeah, closer to 4.5 than 3.5.
Yeah. A healthy 4. No, like, this is, like, the kind of movie that, like, you... I cannot recommend this movie enough. Please watch House of a Thousand Corpses. but, like, this is, like, I think this is a fun movie to watch with friends, if you have other horror-loving friends in your life. You can also watch it by yourself, but, like, I don't know. I think it's just, it's a good summer movie, I think.
It is. It does. It has summer vibes, even though it's, like, stormy and gross in the movie.
Yeah, but then during the daytime, just because of the coloring that's used,
yeah,
just, like, this feels like a gross, like, desert summer.
And the carnival stuff. Yeah, like, it's exactly. Very, like, spring and summer. Like,
even though it's, like, the whole beginning takes place in, like, the pouring rain.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Any other final thoughts?
You need to watch 3 from Hell. That's my final thought.
Okay, fair. I think, yeah, I mean, I will watch 3 from Hell along with the other myriad of movies you want me to watch. But I think that is going to wrap it up for the week. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. That was House of a Thousand Corpses from 2003, directed by Rob Zombie. Thank you so much for joining us this week, Carly. I know it was last minute, but I really appreciate it. This was super, super fun.
Yes, it was.
Next week, if you saw, we posted about it on Instagram, we are not going to be releasing an episode for the week of Christmas. We're very, very sorry, but we really just want to make sure Anthony has the chance to recover, before we start, producing episodes again. So we are going to be, releasing our next episode on New Year's Day, that Friday. Let me make sure I'm correct here. Yes. New Year's Day. We are going to be coming back with a whole new episode on Friday, January 1st. So that is when we will be back. So I hope on behalf of myself and of Anthony that you have a very wonderful Christmas, if that's your thing. And hopefully, you know, enjoy your time off of work and a happy New Year's. And we will see you then. If you like what you heard, please, please, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It means the world to us and it helps keep us boosted in the charts. And if you want to find us on social media, feel free to do so as well. Stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. And we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And if you are so inclined, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ghost Coffee Shop. And if people so inclined, can they find you on social media or are you incognito?
You can find me on Instagram. That's the only thing that I really use. The handle is Goddess of Stuff and Things. I know it's long, but it's accurate.
I love it. Yeah, so I think that'll do it. Thank you again so much for joining us, Carly. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was really fun.
So until the new year, everyone, don't go looking for murder trees after sideshow attraction hunting. Bye, guys.